when I was going to school at the university in Superior, and I would hang around WEBC, and the university had no radio station at all at the time. But I went up there pretty soon. They let me do all the Superior programs because WBBC went and moved to Duluth. But they still kept the studios in the Telegram building in Superior. That went on for a considerable time, and WBBC got a permit to start a station in Eau Claire. They called me in and said, would you want to go to Eau Claire? So that was my first job away from home. And I was down there in the wintertime. It had limited power and had a limited time that they could be on the air. They don't do that anymore. But in the winter, you had to sign off at 4:30 in the afternoon. You signed off for the day. And in June and July, you could stay on till, perhaps 7:30, 8 o'clock. So I joined the staff, and at 4:30, we would shut the whole thing down and go out somewhere and drink beer. As the months would change, we were allowed another half hour. So, I was there and heard about a station over in St. Paul. We're looking for people. So I went over there and was hired right away and opened up for them in the morning. And over there, you didn't play the records for your music. They had a union man there that did that. And I was there until coming home. I'd come home on the train, about once every other month or something. One time when I came home in the local paper, the Telegram, there was a notice they were going to start a station in Superior. It was started by James Conroy, who was an attorney under Mayor Baxter. And for this group, Conroy at the head, Mayor Baxter was a stockholder, and so was a Dr. Weisberg. And Conroy was a real good fella, didn't really practice law, but he started Catlin Courts in Bayview and Park Place and all the scattered sites in Superior. You see, the war was on and the shipyards were going full blast, and they tore down a lot of old shacks in the north part of town and put up the units that are still there. So that was WDSM, and that's when it started, and was sold to the Ritters. That's the Duluth Herald and News Tribune. But Conroy had the station for, I think, about 5 years. After that, he started a station down in Ottumwa, Iowa. And I went down there a couple of times to help him out. So
you humped around a lot. You moved around.
Oh, yeah.
When you were on the radio at these various stations, were you doing reporting the news or were you doing music?
Well, in those days, you did most everything. You did the news and you did the weather and you read the commercials. And you had maybe a sports guy. He did the sports, but you did most everything else.
So what was it like being in the radio station back in those days when you had the war going on? You know, kind of like paint a picture about what that was like.
Well, you were welcome everywhere. There were only three stations in Duluth and Superior, and you were invited to be up in the range, or you were an authority, even though you were a kid, you were an authority on radio because there were only three stations.
And what was it like in the stations themselves? I mean, we have computers now where we get all of the news, but where were you getting the news?
Well, we had a news machine, Associated Press, I believe, and it made some noise, so we built a thing all around it so it would be quiet, and that's the way it was for a lot of radio stations. It was pretty good, but being up here, we were just a kind of a branch of the Associated Press. Much more detailed news, which was not of interest to us, was on there, but it was from the, like, Milwaukee and Madison area, as far as Wisconsin goes.
So you talked about how the shipyards were really busy during the war. What was it like in Duluth Superior during that time when you were working at these stations?
Well, it was, there were pretty good times. Everybody was working. This Conrad that I mentioned before, he just wrote a letter to the draft board and got everybody exempted. That was real early. And then...
What do you mean, got everybody exempted? Everybody at the radio station? Like
at
you?
At the radio station.
Okay.
Well, see, he was... You'd never be exempt now with all the stations, but there were only three at the time. So that lasted for a couple of years. They had another drive, and by then I was married, and that exempted you. And that was for maybe 2 or 3 years. And then they had another drive on. By then I had one child, so that exempted you. And the next time around, I was too old.
They didn't want you in the war effort anymore.
No, that's correct.
Well, what do you remember about, you know, the stuff that you did for the station, like the things that you covered? What stands out in your mind?
Well, we did a lot of things. For instance, shipyards were working on five ships, and... each ship was for a Dion quintuplet. And I think the first time they came into the United States, they came in to launch the ships. So the shipyard at Butler had five ships all lined up in a row. It was a sideways launching, not a straightforward. And they had five ships. And the Dion quintuplets came up here, and they had high security because they had security from Canada and the United States both.
And so they were, can you tell me about who the quintuplets were? Because I don't...
Oh, well, they were five little girls that were born in Canada. And when they were up here, all dressed the same, real cute... They were 7 years old at the time of this launching. And each little girl would climb up the stairs, and they had a bottle for to smash. And I also did the same thing. I had permission to broadcast from one of them. You see, in those days, you had to run a telephone line in. So I did that. But I had all the credentials. My boss, this Conroy that I mentioned, he promised me a new hat if I could get the call letters on of WDSM in a paper, not the local papers, not Minneapolis, but somewhere else, and he'd buy me a new hat. So I climbed up to all five launching platforms, pretended that I was talking, and every time the newsreels were there, every time somebody was taking a picture, I held up the microphone that had the call letters across the top. So it worked out real well.
Yeah, he bought you the new hat, huh?
Yeah. Well, pretty soon we saw all the WDSM call letters on the local papers. But pretty soon his friends that he had around the country started sending them in. And all over the United States, here came the front pages of the paper to my boss, and there were the call letters on, and I was holding the microphone.
So WDSM was on the map.
Absolutely. He said, well, go down and get your hat. So there were a lot of stores in Superior in those days. In fact, Superior, I think, had four or five real fine men's clothing store. So I went to one place called Branzer's. They had a Borsellino that was a fine Italian hat, and it cost a lot of money. And so that's the one I got. And when my boss and I would be out somewhere together, he'd say, hey, look at that. This guy works for me. He's got a better hat than I got.
Well, can you also describe, you know, what the mood was like in Superior at that time?
Well, it was really good because everybody was working, so it was good, except, you know, there was a war on and fellows were leaving. Every once in a while, they'd have to get on the train. The train would take them down to some army camp down south, of course, from here. Then they'd end up all over the world, kind of. So it was a good time for those that were here, but for those that had to leave, a lot of them were gone for 2 and 3 years.
And some probably didn't come home. What are some other memories you have, you know, of working in broadcasting that really stick out in your mind? Like, I mean, I'm sure you've covered a lot of significant events over time.
They called one time, they started the USS Duluth. They were going to dedicate the ship, and they sent a plane up here, and we got on, and it went to New York. What they were doing, they were moving the shipyards out of New York because the pay scale was the highest in the United States, whether you were a ship fitter, a painter, a welder, whatever you were. And this was the last ship that was built in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And they moved the whole operation down south, where the pay scale was a lot lower.
I thought you told me a story once where you met John F. Kennedy.
Sure. You see, there were 7 Kennedys here. You see, Wisconsin had an early presidential primary. So the Kennedys decided they'd come here. So 7 of them came here. There was the mother, Rose. There was Mrs. Sergeant Shriver and Mrs. Peter Lawford. They were both daughters of the Kennedys. And then there was Bobby and Teddy and, of course, Jack and Jackie. And there were 7 Kennedys in Superior. Somebody out east must have decided what they should do. So they start at the top of Wisconsin and spend a couple of days there, and then go down around Eau Claire and make some side trips out of Eau Claire, then go down to Madison, spend considerable time there, then go to Milwaukee and stay there until the election. Kennedy was running against a popular Minnesota lawman, Hubert Humphrey, and ended up that he defeated Humphrey, and the whole group went to West Virginia and did it all over again. So
what was it like then when you met the Kennedys?
Oh, they were nice, so nice. Of course, with that money, you could be.
You could afford to be nice.
Yeah, that's right.
Are there other important figures that you remember interviewing during your time working at the radio station?
Well, you see, being on the top of Wisconsin and close to Minnesota in radio and later on in television, you got a double dose because you had the politicians and you had the people, the governors and their staff and everything. And you had them from two states rather than if you were located in, for instance, Eau Claire or Warsaw or something like that. So we had our plenty of dose of politicians.
So you got to know all the political movers and shakers in Minnesota and Wisconsin.
That's right.
Were there other presidents that you remember covering?
Oh, one time, yes. I had a lot of friends in Superior, and they were going down to Spooner, I guess, and they're going to get on the train with President Harry Truman. And so I joined them, and down we went. This was in the days when a president running for office would get on a train and go across the United States. And this one was the last one because he was in for another 4 years. You see, he got in when Roosevelt died. He was vice president. So we went down and got on the train, and it had to be just a kinder and gentler time because here were people that nobody knew who they were, really. We all got in the line and went in and shook hands with them. And so then he came in Superior. There was a big crowd there, of course, but nobody was too sure where the train was going to stop, at least in the back end, where the back end was going to be. So it stopped and the people all rushed to the back end. And he came on. If you were lucky or something, you could be standing within about maybe, 10 feet from the President of the United States. And so he came out and said, it's nice to be here. And he invited his wife. As his wife came out, she was Bess Truman. And he talked for 2 or 3 minutes, met some people, the mayors of both Duluth and Superior, and then the train took off. But we had a chance to shake hands with them on the trip up in the train coming up from Spooner. The story was that he, on the night of the election, went to bed thinking he was defeated and woke up in the morning and he was the president of the United States for another 4 years.
When they had those newspaper headlines that were wrong that said, Dewey defeats Truman?
That's right. Sure.
Yeah.
Well, the papers had to go to press, you know, kind of early. And big ones, I think the one that is always brought up is one in Chicago, Chicago Tribune, I believe.
So it was a surprise for everybody.
Yeah.
What else do you, like, how long were you in broadcasting before you retired from that?
I was in till I was about 66. Been a long time since I've been out, too.
Yeah, and since you've been out, what have you been up to? You've been a mover and shaker in county government?
Yeah, I was on the county board for about 30 years. And that kept me busy. And I'm real fortunate because I have two boys that live in Superior. I've got a daughter that lives in Duluth. We get together every Sunday, try to go. We go out and eat somewhere. And, hey, it's pretty nice.
Yeah. So what's it like for you to be turning 100?
Well, I wish I could walk faster. But I feel good, and so I've been real lucky. And all my friends, of course, are dead, but you make new ones, and hey, it works out pretty good for you.
What have you learned in your 100 years Do you have any pearls of wisdom for us, Lou?
I don't think so. A person should just do their job and save their money. Being so old, I could have easily run out of money. But because I had saved quite a lot, and you see, every year you build up a little on Social Security, so I get along real fine. And but you don't have anything to need money for. I have a nice home. I have my boy there. He helps me out. And I drive a Buick car. It's pretty old, but it hasn't gone very far.
You're still driving?
Oh, sure. I drove up here. Sure. No, I drive. Yeah.
So you still get around?
Oh, sure.
Looking back on your life, are there things that you wish you would have done or that you still want to do?
Well, I still don't want to do anything, just be alive. And I don't know. I'm happy with the way everything turned out. And my kids are all in good health and have some children. And so I'm a doting old grandfather.
So how many kids did you have with your wife?
I had four.
Four?
Yeah, two boys and two girls. And one girl died. But the other three are right here in Duluth or Superior. So, hey, and we get together. And they come over and see me. And on Sunday, after I go to church, I come home, and they come over, and then we go out and eat somewhere. So that's not all bad.
Yeah. Do you feel like your priorities have changed over the years?
Pardon me?
Do you feel like your priorities have changed? You know, I think about, like, you know, when you're young, you work a lot, and people focus on their careers. And then, you know, does it... family become more important, or were you always a family man?
Family was, of course, always important to me. There are things that, when you get older, I used to go deer hunting all the time. Well, you know, I would walk through the woods with a bunch of other fellows, and I just can't do that. I haven't been able to do it for several years. I had a cottage down at Solon Springs for a long time. I had it for over 40 years. And so that was nice. Had a lot of nice friends down there. Solon is a nice place to get away from some of the cold weather that we have here. Even in June or July, it's always warmer down there. So that's been real good. And I was lucky to have that. And then I traveled around quite a lot of different places. Went on three cruise ships. Used to go down for the month of, for the month of February, generally, and go down just over the border from Brownsville, Texas. You're ready to Mexico. And that was always a good one. And went out to the West Coast out there in areas. And I had friends that lived out there. My daughter was out there for a while, and around the San Francisco area. So I'd visit them and visit people. They'd have to they'd have to put up with me for 2 or 3 days, and then I'd come home.
Nobody puts up with you, Lou.
I had a sister in Philadelphia, so, you know, I would take a car and go out to, like, San Francisco, go down into the Mexican area, go all the way across where I had a boy at that time in Georgia, and then I had a sister up in outside of New York, in Pennsylvania, and then go home. So
you've been all over the country.
Yes.
So over the years, then, what do you like that's changed in the time that you've been around, and what do you not like about how things have changed?
Well, I guess when you get old, you think there was always better in the old days. I'm not sure that it was. Especially, you see, I was around during all the Depression times with Coolidge, and then right after that with Herbert Hoover, and then Roosevelt came in, and he was there until he died, right in the office, out of Hot Springs, I guess, or somewhere around there. So there's a lot of people that haven't any idea of bad times and people being unemployed, big long lines of people waiting to be fed at the government centers, but you gotta say it's better now than having something like that. Stock market is good, a lot of building going on. An awful lot of companies that are making money, and nobody knows what's going to happen with the present president.
Yeah, well, we're all keeping eyes on what's happening there. What about Duluth and Superior, though? What are the things that you've seen change over the years?
Well, I'm sorry to see Duluth. Duluth was over 100,000 at one time. And it would gradually go down. And when they would take the census, they'd shake all the areas that they could to keep the population over 100,000. But it went down to the present thing. And I think a lot of it is to do with the weather. And I notice it more. I used to enjoy ice fishing and things like that, and looking forward to something. Now, I hate the winter because it's hard to get around.
Is it too warm for you? Too slushy, or
what's that?
Is it too warm for you, or the winters, or
The winters? Well, I don't mind the cold because I'm not outside. I stay inside, but I do mind when I go out that it's hard walking. It's hard walking for me anyway in the summertime, and the winter ice doesn't help any.
Right, yeah. Do you have any stories that you would like to share about either your experiences in broadcasting or just living in the Twin Ports?
No, I guess not. It's hard to remember all these things.
Well, any secrets to a long life?
What's that?
Any secrets to a long life?
No. I just play one day at a time, and I think to have a good family that, you know, supports you. And I certainly get that from my two sons and my daughter. And that's nice.
Well, I appreciate you coming in, Lou. I hope you have a very happy 100th.
Well, thank you.